Mark, with all the countries that we've explored on our shows, which is one that you'd like to visit after what we've learned about it?
That is a great question, and I think you might be surprised.
Oh, which one?
Senegal in Africa. It's right on the ocean. They love Christmas and believe it is a time to come together for something greater than ourselves. They have such great food with Middle Eastern, Portuguese, and French influences. And of course, that Abene music festival of 10 days of drumming and dancing for all the newly circumcised. It sounds really quite charming. Do you have one?
Oh, yeah. Slovenia. You know, in Eastern Europe?
Oh, yes. The beauty. The caves. The three Santa Clauses.
Nope. The free beer fountain.
Beer! Beer! Give us a beer!
Hello, fountain!
Oh, it's even better than I imagined!
Wow. It's remarkable.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
Bon Natale! Don is camping!
We are the Wild and Crazy
Guys! Well, they're both festive, aren't they?
We are the Festive Foreign Film Fans! Hey, Mark! Let's start out season three with a bang. Well, Jake started it out with a bang because we need to announce the newest member of the Festive Foreign Film family, Lorelei.
When I think of Lorelei, my head turns all around. As gentle as a butterfly. She moves without a sound. Lorelei, let's live together.
Go ahead, you can sing, Mark. I think the way she moves is like she cries.
They only do really just a couple things. Yes. They eat, they poop, they sleep, they poop.
The way she moves.
I mean, our little Jakey's a daddy.
I know. Now do we have to change his name? He's no longer the Sound Pounder?
Oh, he is the Sound Pounder.
But we have to say, so Jake is not. He's tending to the baby tonight. So we have Jake's boss man. And here's the funny thing.
Remember how Jake used to complain about his boss man?
Oh, I know.
Like, is this the dude that Jake complains
all the time? And we had to shut him down and say, come on, we're trying to record a podcast here. What I wonder is, a part of Wayson Studios, do you have to have like a cool name? Name to work here, because we have like Jake Fontana, who sounds like on the street, and then Justin Labreck, like that
Labreck.
I know it sounds like he's like an international spy. Jake's rolling craps on the street, and Justin's in the casino in Monaco,
he'd be like the main character in a John LeClaire novel.
Yes, exactly.
True.
Well, welcome to our season three, Mark. Can you believe it? It's our new season for Festive Foreign Film Fans, and I have been so excited for this since last year. Jake became that recurring sex craze character on the show. That was a mistake on our part, because now we lost him. We forgot to fill him in on the safe part of being the sex craze neighbor. We're at the start of a season once again. And you know what I did? I reached out to our consultant.
Oh, come on.
We've kept him on retainer.
No.
I want to know. The best series in season three, what do we need to do to remain successful with our five listeners?
I can't believe you've actually reached out to this consultant again.
Yeah. And it was really great, because what he said is the most successful shows in season three, we have to change the patterns and themes of what we do. So I'm looking at my notes. It says, he said the tone of the podcast now has to get darker or more serious. That's what tends to happen in a season three. And he recommends a shift in our roles.
So you're going to sing from now on?
No, then we'd lose the five that we have. So we have to do whatever we can to hang on. But no, one of us has to have a downfall, become an enemy, become evil. And I'm thinking, hey, look at this. You're the one who's retired. You have more time. You can develop your dark side for us. What do you think?
Bob, just so it's clear to you and to listeners, it is much harder to fake being nice. I am not a good person. You know, when we play pickleball and I'll rip a shot off your forehead and I'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm not sorry. You know what? I get angry when I do that because I don't draw blood.
See, you're doing it already. You're scaring me.
Yeah, I don't got to work on anything.
And then you can go out there and tell Jake that his singing is just average.
It is just average.
We can bring in his new daughter, Lorelai, and you can make him cry in front of her.
Well, you know what, though? Why don't you bring in Tori? So I can tell her what a backwards country punk ass Taylor Swift is. And then she lip syncs her concerts.
Come on. Now you're going low.
Yeah, I mean,
now you're
You think I'm afraid of Tori or Lorelai or Jake? I'm not. Yeah, this is the real me, Bob.
This is the
baddie. You asked for it?
This is the baddie coming out.
This isn't the baddie. This is the natural
Mark.
This is
season three. Mm-hmm. It's already taken a turn to the dark side.
So your stupid consultant, you should have said,
hey, don't lay into the, you can speak bad about everyone else, but don't lay into my consultant. He says we also need to take some of the story arcs from earlier shows and use them to evolve into more complex conflicts. How about that?
Interesting. I don't know what that means, but sure. What does that mean, Bob?
Well, I was thinking, what could we carry from last year, carry into this year? And I thought about that personal fact that you shared with us from Easter. Remember your internal guilt for how you golf on Good Friday to the shame of your saintly mother? So you could be sitting there with the angel Mark on one side of your shoulder battling with the devil Mark. And then you come to the recording session and you're all hopped up on Mountain Dew and Ding Dongs and Flaming Hot Funyuns. And Jake and I will have to face the fact that, Mark, you have an eating disorder.
Wait. So I'm angry and I have an eating disorder?
Well, this is what the consultant calls world building. We have to expand our world building.
Sounds like waste building.
We have to make our podcast universe bigger. We have to introduce backstories from outside of this studio. Isn't it good that we're paying him for this?
Yeah. So wait a minute. I have an eating problem.
Well, you're suffering from the guilt of golfing on Good Friday.
Yeah.
That has led to your eating disorder.
Okay.
And you're also angry and you're striking out at all of us. That's the evil side of you.
Okay.
We then have to face some turning points morally, emotionally, and professionally. If we take away your snack foods, do Jake and I get to eat them? Or is beer considered a food? Because I'm not sure I want to take that away from you because that you usually share that with me. And then who's going to tell Sue? And who's going to order the pizza when we send you off to rehab?
You know, I have a drinking problem. I have an eating problem. I'm angry.
Well, I haven't even got to the best part. He also says we need to subvert expectations to keep things fresh and to experiment with our storytelling. So I think we can borrow something from Crumbs. I'll dress like Santa and I'll hit you with a bite because of all the suffering, because you're striking out and this would be a form of therapy. You know, it's going to be our most daring, honest, and inspiring season yet. We're going to explore the psyche of Mark Chandler.
Wow.
Before we dive in to start off our season three, we have to take care of an outstanding trivia question. We have to go all the way back to episode 50. Our New Zealand episode, because then we had our anniversary show in between.
Guess how much I made in tips that night?
Oh, yes. How much?
$3.
Wow. Did that bring you up to minimum wage?
It did not.
How much did you have to pay the busboys and the bartenders?
Well, I had to give them all $3. And you know what the worst part was?
What's that?
It took me 2 days to get the guacamole out of my ears.
That's from the food fight.
Yes.
Andre and I.
But go ahead. Back to our trivia.
So listeners have been clamoring for this answer for about a month. They all wanted to know, if you recall in our trivia, there was a song that caused a 21-year-old New Zealander to burst into a radio station, take the manager hostage, and demand that he would play a certain song. And it is, get ready.
Ready.
It's The Rainbow Connection by Kermit.
Oh my gosh.
Someday we'll find it, the rainbow.
I can see you softening already.
The lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Miss Piggy could have done so much better than Kermit.
That's rude. I think if they played that song, I'd go hold the radio station manager hostage. But let us kick off our new season. We're going to return back to one of our favorite places, Eastern Europe. And this is one of its least populated countries. We discover a place that fuses Nordic, Scandinavian, Baltic, and Soviet influences. It supplies long summer nights and old world charm. Yes, we are talking about a movie that Andre actually mentioned in his interview, and we had already prepared to watch. We're talking about Estonia and the Phantom Owl Forest.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
Which I will now say in Estonian. Ia julud tandekuko.
That was pretty good.
Yes, Estonia. We're talking, it's covered in dense forests, and the culture is deeply embedded in nature and magical tales of the woods. You got a sense of that in this film, didn't you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And once again, Eastern Europe does not disappoint.
No, not at all. It's a compact little country that connects Europe with the East. And let's highlight some of the actors that are in this film. The first actor is the young woman, Ia. She's played by Paula Ritz. Paula was 10 years old when she was selected from 3,000 applicants to play the lead role. And this reminds me also of the Slovenia film, Kappa. It's amazing. It's these kids, like their first films, and they're phenomenal. And what makes them great is how natural they are. Yeah. And she received the Best Actress in the DeMont Best Children's Actors Awards for this role. Then we also have Jeet. And what is great about Jeet is she also will be singing tonight's song for us. She is a popular singer in Estonia. She was born and raised in Tallinn, Estonia. She's also the daughter of a professional soccer player named Marek Lemsalu. So her name is Liss Lemsalu. She became famous as the season 4 champion of Estonian Idol. She was then signed to the Universal Musical Group, where she recorded a self-titled solo album, as well as several popular singles. So she was doing very well in her music career. And then there's Mart Pius, who plays Moritz. Mart is a Estonian stage, television, and film actor whose career began in the 2010s. Both he and his twin brother, Prit, enrolled in the Performing Arts Department of the Estonian Academy of Music and Theater, and they graduated in 2012. So he's relatively young. He and his brother have been cast together. They play a lot together twins. Yeah. They also have both been diagnosed with diabetes type 1, so they have become spokespersons for how to take care of yourself, live with the condition, and raise awareness of that illness. So, Mark, I'm going to talk about this film, but the one thing I want to say, the way that they show Estonia, it was so cozy. It was charming. I wanted to be there.
In the very beginning of the movie, or early on the movie, where they show the downtown market. No, it's right in the beginning.
Right at the beginning,
she's drawing.
I was going to say that. Yes,
Oh, my, oh, my gosh.
It's just stunning.
Was that Tallinn?
Tallinn, yeah. Yeah. And I know there will be some people, especially people who have seen some of our other films. This is a little bit more lightweight. Yep. It's a little bit more Hallmark-ish.
Absolutely.
But I didn't mind it at all. And they had skating and the snowball fights and all that stuff. But all it did was it made it more endearing and more that I wanted to be there, because they seem like people living here and this is how they behave.
I think it has the same components of many Hallmark movies, but the backdrop of Estonia, a little bit twist on what is the event or the cause that unites them all, is probably different than we see in Hallmark movies.
Truly. And it starts out just like you described. There's a little girl who actually is working at a Christmas market, and she makes drawings of animals, really good drawings of animals. I, like you, the first time I watched it, I'm looking around. She's by herself, and she talks to some other people at the market. Her father comes to pick her up, and you realize she's kind of lonely. She wants a dog. Her mother is a ballerina. The mother had made a promise, you know, she'd been so busy, but she was going to have a holiday now, right. And she was going to spend a lot of time, and they were going to do Christmas things. And then she gets the call, another ballerina has broken her leg. It's a great opportunity for the mother. She has to take it. So we know she's already lonely,
yep. And
they're fighting over who's going to be responsible, whose career is more important. They weren't evil parents. These were very real conflicts. Yeah. It's just life sometimes. You know, they're very busy because she's an only child, so she spends a lot of time on her own. I think they're just trying to get by.
Yeah, I think any couple where there's two career household and children, I think could empathize with the situation the parents find themselves in.
Yeah. The mother suggests that they send her to this old man to watch her, and the father is dead set against it. But in the end, it's the only alternative they have. And the old man turns out to be her grandfather.
That's right.
And they drive out, and they live in the city in an apartment in the city, and they drive out. First off, it's beautiful, rural, forested country.
Yep.
And then they live in these homes that look like they're beautiful little lodges.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are, which makes watching Christmas movies in the hot summer days so much fun. This movie is very easy to get absorbed into and get lost in.
Oh, and they play up the wintry aspect of it. So you're in a forest, beautiful, blanketed with snow. The grandfather isn't home at first. I don't think the mom even tells she's coming.
Correct.
So they go to the neighbor's house. Friendliest people. They're baking cookies. The kids are nice. And the girl is just taken with this right away. Yeah. And they all know of her.
They know of her.
And so she's curious. You know, she's just learned of a grandfather. And now these people who know about her. And they also have a dog, which she loves. So she meets the neighbors. There's a boy there who is her age. The mother is very motherly. And so then the grandfather comes, and at first he doesn't realize who she is. And then he meets her. He's the classic, almost lumberjack looking.
Yeah.
Big beard, wearing a flannel shirt. Not stern. He's a good guy. He's very nice. And so she goes to stay at his house, and you realize that there's some issue between the father and the grandfather, but she's starting to learn about the grandfather and where he lives. Jeet comes the next day, and she meets her, and she turns out to be the grandfather's daughter.
It would be her aunt. Her aunt.
Yeah, it's her aunt. She just meets her. There's a man there who comes to the grandfather's house, upset, crying. The girl doesn't understand what's going on. This man was alcoholic, sold off his land to the developer who wants to tear down all the trees and build houses there. So that becomes the moral dilemma of the movie in terms of the grandfather and the neighbors. They all want to stop this from happening, but this individual has sold the land and he got a permit and he can do it. As she gets to know these people, Jeet is a photographer.
Yep.
She takes pictures. In fact, the sketches that the girl draws are from pictures she didn't realize that Jeet had taken for a calendar.
That's right.
They're out. They're spying on nature. There's beautiful shots, taking pictures, goofing around. So she really gets close to Jeet. We meet Ravo, the developer. Mm-hmm. And then the boy, he collects feathers.
Bird feathers, right?
Yeah. She sees an owl, and she gets a feather of the owl, and it turns out that this is the phantom owl, which is an endangered species.
Right.
Which if they can prove that the owl nests in the woods, they won't be able to cut down the trees.
Yeah. Yeah, she grabs the feathers, then she's this great artist, and she grabs a picture of it. So she shows the feather to the boy, and then she shows the picture to everyone else, and they're like, how did you draw that picture? And she's like, oh, I saw that owl up in a tree.
And they were like stunned.
Yeah.
They're like, what? And there had actually been like a legend of
the phantom owl,
but no one had seen it, and she just happens to see it.
Yeah, I should also say, too, that Mortis has an incredible crush on Jita. I mean, there's sort of this understanding between them, but they don't really aren't really acting on it, which is important because in any Hallmark movie, you have to have this like
a love interest.
Who can't act on it? Because what happens, Bob, when they find the owl, who do they have to bring in?
They have to bring in the government person to investigate and prove that the owl is there.
Yep.
And he's the handsome wildlife guy who now suddenly Mortz has competition.
That's right.
And he's interested in Jeet. This is very Hallmark about it. Everybody wants them to get together. They all know it. They're all helping.
Yep.
And it's just the two of them that won't do it, right? Which is classic.
It was so predictable when it happened. But I still didn't care.
In fact, you're cheering for them to get together too. Although, like, to be fair, the wildlife guy doesn't turn out to be a jerk or anything like that either. He saves the day.
He wants to save the phantom owl as well.
Yes. And like I said, they have skating. They have snow fights. They have a sauna. They are doing all of these things. Thea learns from her grandfather that he and her grandmother drifted apart. And he fell in love with another woman.
Yep.
And went to live with that other woman, and her father and her grandmother moved to the city and lived in the city. And that is why she suspects that the father is so angry at his father, is because he cheated on his mother and left her for another woman.
Right.
As the storyline with the owl is developing, and as the storyline with Mortz and Jeet and all the drama, Ia and the other boy, they discover letters that the grandfather had sent to Ia's father.
Right.
For years. It's a huge pile of letters. And those letters were returned. And slowly you'd start to realize that the letters that the mother had returned, his letters, in the father's perception, his dad just dropped out of his life and wanted nothing to do with him. So it's classic miscommunication.
Yep.
To bring this to a head, the mother and father come to take Ia and bring her home. She doesn't want to leave. She's now very close to all of the people and the grandfather. And she wants the grandfather and the dad to make up. Perfect timing. Blizzard blows in. They're going to have to stay there, stay overnight. And she gives the father the letters from the grandfather. He reads them. He
starts to cry. Realizes his dad was always there for him. But it was a nice moment.
No, it was.
I wasn't sure how they were going to resolve everything.
I wasn't either. Even though in the end, it kind of seems like it's tied up in a nice tidy bow and it's all great. It didn't feel that way because he starts cutting down the trees, Riavo, and there is some fear. They're not sure if they can prove that the owl is there.
Well, and it's funny, though. You said, like, from the son's perspective, he thought my dad abandoned me. From the dad's perspective, he thought, well, did the son return the letters? Like, it sort of comes out that it was the ex-wife. So both of them didn't know the truth as to what happened with the letters.
Right, and I think the grandfather probably thought he was just so angry at what he did and didn't want to have anything to do with them.
Right. That they reconcile. What happens, Bob, with the forest?
They prove that the owl is there and they rescind the permit.
Wasn't that owl cool looking, though?
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It's so funny because there's supposedly owls around here and I hear them. I've never, ever seen one, but I'd like to see an owl.
They're really hard to find.
I loved the environmental sustainability theme through this.
Yes.
You know what I mean? These people love the country and they wanted to preserve it no matter what.
So, Bob, was this film festive?
Oh, Mark. I love the word cozy to describe it, but I almost think it's not enough. It is really cozy. I mean, it wraps you up in it and it's like a big blanket. This movie is very, very festive. And Christmas is there. It's all happening at Christmas time. And there are elements of it. And, you know, there's decorations in the background. But it's not beating you over the head with Christmas.
No.
Not at all. I mean, it's really focused on the dynamics, all the personal dynamics that are happening.
For sure.
But it is incredibly festive.
How did it make you feel? You're all gooey over there.
I know. Yeah. I really, really enjoyed it. I think you've talked about sometimes some movies where you finish it and you put you in such a happy, good mood. And that's what this one did. And I love that all the people may sound one-dimensional and stereotypical, but they weren't. I feel like they were genuine people, and you knew Jeet and Moritz were going to end up together, but it was fun to watch it happen.
It was fun to watch it. Are you going to watch it again?
Yeah, this is one I'd like to share. Mary Ellen, I think, would really enjoy this film.
Yeah, I do too.
So it would be one I would share with her. And I think it'd be one to show kids too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you got the elements, you have young characters in it. So
PG easily, maybe even G.
Yeah, I would say G.
And so you would recommend it in the future then?
I would. How about you?
It's rare that you and I agree on everything, but I couldn't agree more. I got excited about it because it was a good movie. And it was a little bit predictable, but it still, at the same time, sort of stood on its own.
Yes. All right, Mark, you want to know how to say Merry Christmas in Estonian?
I do.
Haid Jula. No, Jula.
Haid Jula.
Haid Jula is the most common expression for Merry Christmas. It's an Estonian word. Julad is Christmas, and that is of ancient Scandinavian origin. So Julad describes the winter solstice, which we know is celebrated between December 21st and the 25th. And in the old days, the Christmas period marked the annual turnover. And we've seen this time and time again, all the celebrations around the solstice, especially in more rural type areas that they are celebrating. The lights coming back, you know, we can grow our crops, food, life. What people did during this holiday season, it was believed that it would affect their luck for the whole year. It was a very important time because spirits of the loved ones who had died, they were believed to return home and play a role in how the households would fare that for that year. So you had ghosts, you had anything you do was going to affect the year. So according to the folk tradition, the sun was laying in the nest, and the day was celebrated as the sun's birthday. So from that day on, the sun started to rise and move slowly to the north again. And we'll talk about the traditions, but you could imagine that there were probably a number of things like we've seen, in especially some of these nearby countries where they all were concerned about good luck and what they would do to affect their crops and their animals.
Their animals, yeah. No, it's very, very common theme.
All right, let's talk about some of these Estonian Christmas customs. We did see the Christmas market in the heart of Tallinn. Mark, your eye was good to pick it up because it has been voted the best in Europe in a poll of worldwide travelers.
Unbelievable.
And why? Coziness, snowy medieval streets, which you saw, the buildings, mulled wine, enchanting holiday traditions, and long history. And they say this market is set up in the heart of Tallinn's stunning Old Town, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. From its rich history, it offers an unforgettable Christmas experience filled with all of these Christmas twinkling fairy lights. Tallinn is considered Europe's hidden gem, and the Christmas traditions date back to 1441.
It's interesting. I wonder the Christmas markets, do they get overrun by tourists, or is that because of time of year? It's not so bad. I don't know. I'd love to find out.
Yeah, I would too, because I suspect there are a number of tourists, but I also think probably a lot of locals, it's their holiday tradition as well. So some of the newer Christmas traditions are kind of a combination of ones we've heard before. Like on Christmas Eve after Christmas dinner, the family will sit around the tree in order to be given their gift, Santa visits each home to present the gifts. So the kids actually get to see Santa. He comes and to receive their gifts, children have to recite a poem, sing a song, do a dance, tell a story, or do something else to earn their gift. And they say for those who are not talented, they can always tell a joke. The dogs even have to do some kind of a trick as well. And the adults typically tend to sing the same song or tell the same story
over and over. I still think it's kind of cool, these countries where Santa isn't this mythical feature who creeps into your house in the middle of the night. Something about that that's kind of cool.
It is. What would be hard to me, it's like, who do you get? My wife has her family Christmas party and Santa always shows up. And over the years, especially as the kids got older, it was, who could you find, neighbor, friend, who'd be Santa?
Bob, if I ever could be of service to you and your family, $5,000 for 1 hour of my jovial personality.
I was going to say, I don't know. I've seen Dark Mark now. I don't know. In Estonia, cleaning the house, it's a significant part of the Christmas preparations. It's rooted in the belief that cleaning ensures a fresh start to the new year, which
kind of makes sense.
Yes, it does. And it's also a way to honor the ancestors and spirits that are coming back. Since they're visiting, you want the house to be clean. Since the tradition is not to work, you know, you have the holiday off, you clean your house before the 21st, so you're not working during that period. And then another, which we saw, the taking a sauna. A sauna is heated up the morning of Christmas Eve. And again, cleaning the house, cleaning yourself. Oh. It's the physical and spiritual purification. Yeah, the body and soul.
Yeah.
So, hey, how about some food, Mark? Christmas dishes in Estonia, they tend to be hearty and filling, which you'd expect because especially the outdoors activities that you saw them in. So they need energy and warmth in this cold weather. They also include both hot and cold dishes. The most traditional foods are the verevorst, which is blood sausage, served with cowberry or cranberry sauce and very strong Estonian mustard. It's almost a mandatory part of the meal, these blood sausage. Christmas sausages were believed to have been white, made using only grains and onion, and the blood sausage was believed to be a later addition.
Interesting.
It's a dark sausage made with pork blood and barley groats. Accompanied the blood sausage is homemade hapakapsis or sauerkraut. Blood sausage and sauerkraut, which does not sound traditional Christmas to me at all.
The sauerkraut does to me because we have sauerkraut at our Christmas meal every year.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
At Christmas Eve. It's part of the seven dishes from Poland.
Yeah.
And sauerkraut's one of them.
I wouldn't think of it associated with Christmas at all. And blood sausage. Well,
blood sausage. I've had blood sausage, but I agree with you that I've not seen that at a Christmas plate.
Hapukapsas, the sauerkraut, it's a warm version. Fermented cabbage, typically seasoned with caraway seeds. And some may say there is never enough sauerkraut in Estonia at Christmas. Oh my gosh, I can't. Sausage and sauerkraut. And another feature at dinner is soot, a traditional jellied pork meat dish similar to head cheese. And they may have lingonberry jam and pickled pumpkin might be offered on the side to go with the blood sausage, as the acidity is a perfect accompaniment to the richness of the meat.
How about dessert, Bob? Do you have any dessert?
I hope they do.
You're still struggling with that sauerkraut.
Yes. For dessert, gingerbread and some other sweet treats are also common. While these food traditions go way back, Estonian families today may go for some lighter fare because this all seems pretty heavy. They may have some vegetarian or vegan options there instead of the head cheese and the blood sausage. I'm just thinking of the gastric distress of all this.
Well, you better be able to wash it down with some good beer, that's for sure. Yeah.
An interesting thing that's developed, the Estonian island of Saaremaa in the Baltic Sea, they make the Estonic soda spruce tonic water, and it is made from recycled Christmas trees. When the Christmas trees are removed from the public squares, the branches are pulped to extract the flavor, which is then infused with cardamom and lemon. Quinine is added, and then the tonic is carbonated. So each bottle will carry the label of the provenance where they got the tree, linking the tonic water to the tree. This island location was closed to the world for years. It was a restricted zone, declared restricted by the Soviet Union in 1946, was off limits to foreigners, and it was just opened in 1989. Makes me wonder, what was there?
What's going on there?
That they were doing. But now it's a popular destination. It has sandy beaches, and it has that tonic water. It would be kind of fun to get some.
I would try it.
Yeah. I'd rather drink that than eat the blood sausage and sauerkraut.
What about, do they sing in
Estonia? Yes, they do. They have Christmas music. We know they do because we heard it in the movie. The first time we're going to have a Christmas song that was actually played in the movie we watched.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
Why, did you recognize it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
What I love is that I think of it as Jeet. I don't think of it as Lise.
That's right. Yeah.
But this is The Night Has a Feeling, which you will hear is prominently played in the movie, and it's considered the theme song performed by the woman who played Jeet. It's Lise Lemesula. And she made her acting debut in the film, which is surprising because she did so well. She said the lyrics of the song are Christmas-like. So if you look at the lyrics, they don't mention Christmas. She felt like the song reflected the brightness of the film and should provide the listener with a warm feeling. And absolutely. I think because of the film was Christmas oriented and the way the song is, it's just the Estonians have adopted it.
Yeah.
This film is dedicated to the 100th anniversary of the Republic of Estonia. Isn't that great?
It's awesome.
Yeah. And she's a popular singer-songwriter from Estonia. She performs songs in pop, R&B, and funk genres. She started out in the music business when she recorded an album of Norwegian children's songs. And then after that, her career, it skyrocketed, of course, when she won the Estonian Idol. Her song, Sinuis, was nominated for the best song in 2016. And she's been a frequent finalist on Eesti Laulu, the Estonian Eurovision.
Yeah.
And she's appeared on now numerous television shows and big productions.
It's Christmas dinner.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Food they put out for Christmas Eve.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas.
Eat it.
What's up, food for Santa?
Eat it. If it's getting cold, reheat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
Have a banana. Have a...
Our brand new section, we decided, and it was at your urging and your idea when we both voted for the same food item.
Bacon pies.
Yes, when we did for in our second anniversary show. So we decided we're going to go on a exploratory journey this year, and it's going to end with us having those pies, those bacon pies. I thought to get us started, we should reach out to someone who has experience doing exactly what we're proposing to do. So we have an interview now. This is our new segment called Silent Bite, and we're going to interview with Glenn Warren, who's the certified baker and host of the Seasons Eatings podcast. Glenn Warren is a certified baker and the host of Seasons Eatings, a podcast that dives into the history of foods served during the Christmas holidays. Glenn really dives into the colorful history of these foods. He is our guest today for our new segment, Silent Bite. You know, we just had our anniversary show, and we always vote for some of the best items we covered in the past season. Best movies, best songs, customs, and of course, we love the food. And this year, surprisingly, both Mark and I happened to select the same food item as number one. Now, of course, this is a food item that neither one of us had tasted. We just love the sound of it. And we both said, that's the one we'd like to try. So given this fact, Mark had the idea we should commit ourselves to finally making some of this food and trying this dish. And we decided to expand on this idea a little bit to make it more of a journey and an education. And we also want to know how we can make it and why it's served at Christmas. So in order to understand really where we need to go and how to proceed, and the questions we should be asking, we thought we would turn to an expert, Glenn Warren. For those of our listeners who haven't listened to your show, tell a little bit about it and how you got into your show.
Seasons Eatings is a podcast which explores the history of Christmas foods and the origins and why we seem to have them. I started it back in 2020, and I'm not sure if you remember what was happening around that time. We're all sequestered at home.
You cover two of our most favorite topics, both Christmas and food. When you're going to pick a food that you're going to cover, does it have to be a food that you've eaten before?
Oh, no, not at all. I would say, especially nowadays, because I'm going on my sixth season, when I started my podcast, I would obviously pick the stuff I knew quite well already to make it easier on myself. But now, going on 6 years, I've had to explore different countries that I've never heard of. And the great thing, I get to talk to my friends and all their backgrounds and go, When you were growing up, what did you have to eat at Christmas?
So you pick a food. What do you do then once you decide, okay, I'm going to cover this food? What's your process?
I try to find the research first. A lot of the recipes, especially the sort of more classic ones, have been lost to time. But there's a cookbook that was done by the King of England, his chefs. But it's basically, it's a medieval cookbook. And it's kind of like the Rosetta Stone of all cookbooks. So you can go back to that one. You can look through old recipe books from centuries ago. The only caveat to that is that sometimes the recipes and the ingredients and the amounts are not anything what you expect. Another road that you can go down, if you can find words that are similar sounding, you look up the etymology and go, oh, this country has this word which describes this product. I find with a lot of these Christmas traditions were born out of using your food either before it went bad or to celebrate the time of the winter solstice or the time of family celebrations. So you want to bring out the best that you have to give to your guests. Latvians have two huge celebrations. They have a spring celebration and they have a winter celebration. So the winter celebration before Christianity was the Yule, obviously, celebration. I think the summer one was called Jāni. It's to celebrate light coming back into the world around the winter solstice in the middle of December. And so you'd have a big feast. You'd have a feast to celebrate the new year, basically. The earth's getting warmer, the days are getting longer. And so you want to bring out some meat and have all these other festival things going on to, just for celebrations.
And how do you, as a certified baker, feel about, how does this dish sound to you? Does it sound appetizing?
It sounds great. It's part of a feast that usually has 9 or 12 dishes. So it's similar to the Italian, the Feast of the Seven Fishes. Each part of this Christmas meal would mean something.
Is this a dish that we could make, you think?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Don't expect to do it in an hour.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's kind of a two-day process, or maybe like a afternoon process if you're a little bit more experienced. Every kind of culture has a dough thing with meat in it. China has these sort of pork buns that you can eat. England has hand pies, which is like a pastry with dough and vegetables and meat inside.
Well, you've been a great sport. Thank you for helping us out on this journey. We're going to do a piece of it along the way all year.
Thank you.
We love the food. So what did you think of that?
Amazing. I mean, I Glenn's very knowledgeable.
And this all makes me hungry. I'm just telling you.
Well, I always go home and eat. And I
dig out the blood sausage and the sauerkraut and just go to town.
I'm telling you, next Christmas, sauerkraut's going to be delivered to the baker house.
Well, Mark, I want to entertain you with some Estonian trivia.
It's trivia.
It's amazing because Estonia has become a European tech hub. Which is amazing when you think of how small they are and how little population they have. Virtually all of their government services are now available online. They vote online. And many startups and innovation centers are there. Skype was invented there. And I know it just shut
down. That's amazing.
It just shut down. But think about it. It was life-changing. Yeah. I remember people were like, I can talk to someone in Europe and see them, you know?
And there were some people who I saw, I'm like, shoot, I wish I couldn't see you.
Well, I'm sure some people saw you and said, he's nothing like I pictured.
He's so much older.
Estonia even offers a digital identity for non-residents, allowing global entrepreneurs to start and run their businesses online from anywhere in the world. So they really have got the tech thing down. They're like, we're going to reach out to the world and make it really friendly here. So it does not seem like our little 2D a mobile sticker is worthy of the tech-friendly Estonia.
Probably not.
But I thought maybe could we provide them like a Festive Foreign Film Fans hologram?
That would be cool.
We could ask the Estonians to develop that for us maybe. In the meantime, this country does offer more than just high-tech services. First, we thought maybe we'd question you about how in the mid-1980s, Estonians defied Moscow by gathering in the hundreds of thousands, raising the banned Estonian flag and singing banned patriotic songs in what was known as the Singing Revolution. That's Mark, awesome. You would have been right there.
Oh, I
would
have been
with absolutely. Your flag, you're singing at the.
Yes, I love it.
Or the fact that, do you know, Estonia produces the most models per capita and has the highest female to male ratio in the world.
So, Bob, can you name any of the Estonian models?
No. Can you?
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Seriously?
Oh, my God. Carmen Kass, Elizabeth Erm, Kelly Luma. T.U. Cook is...
Mark, we're seeing this whole side of you we haven't seen before.
I mean...
Are you an agent for these people?
I wish, but
Mark,
yes.
How close is Estonia to Germany?
Pretty far.
Oh, darn it.
Yeah.
So when we go there for the film festival, we can't. Mark, the ratio. They have the highest female to male ratio.
It's amazing.
We could be on the market there.
But that was not like a shocking thing to me. Like, I think we should have, our trivia question is like, name the five most beautiful Estonian models. Would have been tough.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah, that would have been tough. We even thought about asking you about kiking or wife carrying. These are two sports in Estonia. Kiking involves standing on a swing and trying to rotate all the way around. They do that.
Oh.
Like go all the way around, like and hang on and not fall.
Oh.
And then wife carrying is the object is to carry a woman, your wife, over an obstacle course, and the price is the woman's weight in beer.
So that's interesting. So, lighter person, you might win, but you don't drink.
I know. I love the fact that they tie it that way because you're like, God, you know, you really want to carry a heavy person so you get a lot of beer, but, you know, you may not win.
It could be one of life's hardest questions ever, Bob.
There's also a pharmacy in Estonia that is more than 100 years old and opened in 1415, and it still is open. It still is there. And then there is an island there called Kinnu, which is the world's last matriarchal society run by women. Mark, we're making a trip to Estonia. But instead, I want to ask you about Tallinn, the capital of Estonia, and its name.
Yes.
It has a very unique history. What does Tallinn mean?
Home of beautiful models. Am I right?
Seeking a more senior American, you know, retired man.
Do you know what links all four of those women together? They have a grandfather fetish.
And how would you know that, sir?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of look like the grandpa, you know? We put you in a flannel shirt and we'll put you a toque on your head. So if you know, Tallinn, where the name came from, we can provide you with some festive foreign film fans AI. And we don't mean artificial insemination.
I thought I was the bad one.
Uh-oh. See, the roles are switching here.
Oh, my God.
Let us know. Send us your answers to festiveforeignfilmfans@gmail.com. We hope you like our new segment for season three. And we're going to do another thing. I'm going to give you the quote, but this was a recommendation from our good friend and fan, Kevin O'Malley, who said, you know what? Tell us next time what countries are coming up in the movies so I can watch them. So he can follow along with us.
Kevin, I always wanted to do it. Bob said no.
Bob's the evil one.
Bob was the evil one.
Yeah.
I've been telling him for years.
So here, Mark, is a quote for you. It struck him that how you spent Christmas was a message to the world about where you were in life. Oh. And that's by Nick Hornby. So Nick Hornby, the writer.
Yeah.
And next episode, we travel to we're focusing on small countries, it looks like, for season three. Small European country of Luxembourg. And we're going to watch the film Paper Souls from 2013. It's available now on Apple TV and the movie database. You know, we made it to season three. And as they say in Latin, omne trium perfectum, which means that everything that comes in threes is perfect. So we may not be perfect, but we also believe in those wise words of Goldilocks. We may not be too cold and definitely not too hot. But for season three, we plan to be just right.
Yes.
So reach out to us, email, Instagram, or through Buzzsprout.
Actually, we're done.
Done.
It's over. Over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.